right, what's going on? Welcome to Kinnell and Bell on this Thursday. If you're watching on CBS Sports HQ, hopefully you are. You're streaming that. You might be listening to the podcast, which is great as well. But you may have noticed that we didn't do our At This Hour, which is our read where we kind of give the latest updates from overnight.
Right.
Do you think it has to do with your little audition the other day when you were reading them? I don't know. I was just wondering that out loud. I'm not complaining because I'm not any good at them either.
Right. Well,
I'd rather just us hang out and just talk as opposed to us playing the role of Ron Burgundy, Anchorman.
Yeah, me too.
Anchorman.
I thought I was excellent though.
I did too.
Exposure. I thought I was.
I think maybe it's a little higher up than that. I don't think it was your direct, you know, audition that you did there, your impression of an Anchorman the other day.
I mean, I reviewed it. I broke the tape down.
I know, right?
Flexion was good. Like, pronunciation was on point. I really felt strong about it.
I bet you did. Right. Tiger Woods is out on the course at the Northern Trust. No, we're going to get to that a little bit later in the show. You've got Kenny Stills, Miami Dolphins receiver, calling out his owner. That's pretty rare, calling out your boss the way he has. And Adam Gase, there is a piece on him which gives you a glimpse inside the mind of one NFL coach. I do think it's interesting because I think it's a way of thinking that we've seen some coaches take, and I don't know if it works. So we'll break down that a little bit later in the show. But to where I want to start is with Kevin Durant. So we haven't talked about Kevin Durant in a while. It's been pretty quiet. But he has gone on the record. He talked to Yahoo Sports, and he opened up a lot about some of the things I was really curious to hear about from him. Is he ticked off at the Warriors? Is he mad at his ex-teammates? Was it a bad split when he signed with the Nets and decided to leave town and opt out? He answered some of those questions. Let's start with the Achilles injury.
Yeah.
When he comes back in the NBA Finals against Toronto, plays 12 minutes, re-injures it, done for the year. There was some speculation. Maybe he's mad at the medical staff. Should he blame them? Should he blame anybody? His quote, "Hell no. How can you blame the Warriors? Hell no. I heard the Warriors pressured me into getting back. Nobody never said a word to me during rehab as I was coming back. It was only me and my trainer working out every day. Right when the series started, I targeted game 5. Hell no. It just happened. It's basketball. Bleep happens. Nobody was responsible for it. It was just a game. We just need to move on from that bleep because I'm going to be back playing."
Shout out Rick Celebrini, his trainer.
Oh, you know Rick?
I know Rick. Steve Nash's guy.
Good dude. Now, is that his personal trainer or is that a Warriors trainer? Is that his personal trainer?
Who?
Rick Celebrini.
Is it KD's personal guy?
Yeah.
At this point, it probably is.
Right. So is he on the Warriors staff?
I don't know because, you know, Steve had he was some sort of,
personal guru guy?
Yeah, Steve's, but Steve had some role with the Golden State Warriors. I don't know if Rick caught on with the Golden State Warriors because Steve introduced him to the Golden State Warriors or not. Like, you know what I mean? But I think it's probably Katie.
So Koga just told me he is the director of sports medicine for the Warriors.
Right.
So he is a part of the staff.
Yeah. He started as Steve Nash's guy, like in NBA circles. But, I was interested in this too, and I've often said that I felt like there had to be something more going on there, that maybe he felt pressured. I'm glad to hear that he didn't feel any pressure coming back. Like, it doesn't take away from the fact that you got injured and you still got to miss another year. But that's it. You don't, like, that's a whole nother layered situation when you start dealing with a team being accused by a player of pressuring him to come back. You know what I mean? And then you don't, that's a black eye for, you know, the NBA, the Golden State Warriors, when that's the case. So I actually, you know, was happy to hear that Kevin Durant felt no pressure and that this was by his own volition, and he and Rick felt like, you know, he was able to come back. And sometimes you miss as a player, you know, especially with ligaments or muscles that are strained. You feel good. You feel like you can do certain things. And while you're in this scripted environment of shooting jumpers and going to touch this line and running back over there, you can kind of compensate and protect that muscle. And it would kind of trick you at times into going out there and thinking that off script and spontaneous movements wouldn't further hurt it. Unfortunately, like, those are the things that you can't protect it against. And you typically, if you're not ready, wind up hurting it again.
So I am really glad Kevin Durant came out and said this. I think it would have been really easy to be vague, to say, well, I don't want to blame anybody, but you never know. I mean, he was definitive saying, no, there's nobody to blame. I think this is really good for Kevin Durant's image. You know, like, first of all, I love the fact that he was willing to put his body on the line. And he did come. Because that's what I, like, before that game, I was right here saying, you got to come back. If there's any chance you can go, you got to put it on the line for your teammates. That was my mindset. Like, yes, that's what I would have done. And I probably go back. There was one of the biggest mistakes I made, and it was regular season, was I came back too soon from a back injury.
Yeah.
And I threw three picks. I didn't practice all week, but I was like, I want to be tough. I want my teammates to see that I'm not, you know, a wuss. I can go out there and play through pain. Had an awful game. And really, all of a sudden, like, the fans, the coaches, they looked at me differently because I had this bad game.
Right.
It's like a consent. And then it started, my confidence started to waver because I had, and I, if I had just sat out that game, maybe gotten fully recovered, maybe I wouldn't have had that one, and it kind of could have gone a different direction. Who knows? Man, I was just bad.
Butterfly effect.
Yeah. But I do think, like, I appreciate that. And I do think fans, because he's taken a lot of criticism from there. He has a lot of haters, and he's obviously well aware of them. We'll appreciate that, hey, he was willing to come out there. And even now, like, if you would have asked me 2 years ago when Kevin Durant is addressing all his haters and he's coming up, I would have said, you know what? He probably would make an excuse. But now he's showing me a different side, saying, no excuses. I'm coming back. I'm going to do the work, and I'm not going to blame anybody. I'm just going to come back. It is what it is, which I can appreciate.
Yeah, well, I mean, I, again, anyone who was questioning Kevin Durant's, like, toughness or willingness to go out there and do whatever he could for his team to win a championship, then you didn't really know Kevin Durant. Like, you haven't been watching him play since he came into the league. I don't know that that was ever anything that should have been questioned. Like, you could question whether he should be on social media as much as he is,
right,
or whether, you know, he should, you know, honor some of these trolls that are trolling him with his retort. Like, that, those are conversations we can have. But whether he's an apex, like, competitor and willing to do whatever he needs to do to try to win, I don't know that that was ever a debatable thing. So I mean, while I understand what you're saying in terms of public perception, for those people who may have doubted him, it might be a good look. For those who knew, this didn't do anything because they already knew. Like, he was, you don't reach that level of stardom, that level of accomplishment by being a dude who's going to sit out whenever he can or when it's convenient. You know what I mean? You are a competitor, to the likes of which, you know, very few people have ever been, like, in any sport. Like, you're talking about one of the most gifted scorers and basketball players of all time. He will go down as, right? Like, he, for what he's, let's say he never even comes back to himself.
Right.
Let's say, still, from what you saw of a dude that size, the skill set he had, the fluidity he played with, he will always be remembered, like, as one of the most gifted players. You don't do that by being a soft cat who won't play through stuff. So while I do agree with you, like, shame on anyone who thought that he wasn't, like, tough enough and wouldn't give it his all given the opportunity to win a championship.
But he does have his haters, and that's kind of what I was alluding to.
Like, no.
And he's in an awkward spot because he is kind of the second fiddle to LeBron, even though this past year, I mean, LeBron was hurt, but it looked like, hey, he was starting to get some more recognition as the best player in the world. There have been some things that I think that he's mishandled publicly, like, you know, the way he does things on social media, getting busted with a burner account,
right,
but those things. So I do think all of this, the way he's handling it so far, is a great step in the right direction of, hey, maybe winning over some of those people like me who looked at him and not a second guesser of his ability, just kind of what he stood for and his public image. I thought he could use something like this, and maybe adversity brings out the best in him, where I think he's handling this really well. A lot of speculation about him had been, how is he getting along with the Warriors?
Right.
Of course, you had Draymond suspended because of their beef earlier in the season. There's always been, well, is he really part of this team? Kevin Durant, when he talked to the media a couple times, he said, you guys are trying to tear us apart. When they asked him, there was a question, I don't even remember it. They said, what about the team? And they almost asked Kevin Durant like he wasn't on the team. And
right.
Durant noticed it. He was like, what do you mean the team? I'm a part of the team.
Right.
It's us. It's not them. So he actually opened up about this supposed beef. And he said, yeah, I'm tired of talking about that bleep. Look, we're grown men. We understand what it is. We're playing basketball for a living. It's business. Everybody congratulated me when I went to the Nets. Everybody wished me well. And they know that I'm still a phone call away. So I just happen to play in a different jersey now. Nothing else is going to change. Do you believe him on this one?
I think there might be more to this one.
Me too.
You know, again, this is one of those where I think he played it correctly. Like, to your point about the previous statement, I think this was well put and what you need to say. You know, relationships are never black and white. Even, you know what I mean? Like, they're just not. And that's what you develop in locker rooms. Like, you have relationships with guys. Like, there are degrees of relationships. Like, one guy might be tighter with you than others, but, you know, these are relationships, and they're fluid, you know, and they're fluid things. Like, some days they're good, some days they're bad. Like, you guys make up, like, you're tighter than you were before. It's just like any relationship you have. So to think that it's all good and no one has any beef with that, I would be reluctant to say that. You know what I mean? But most guys do understand, like, this is a business. This is, you know, we have a small amount of time to, you know, maximize whatever we want to maximize, whether it's money, whether it's, you know, playing in certain markets, whether, you know, it's just, you know, generally enjoying the heck out of your career. And you don't begrudge each other that for the most part. You know, you could still be a little disappointed and salty that your reign as a super team has come to an end and feel happy for a guy for going to do what makes him happy. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, for
relationships
sure.
are complicated like that.
I think different teams are different personalities too. Yeah. You know, some teams are really tight knit. There's a family there. You know, maybe Steph has that with Clay, the Splash Brothers. Maybe they have it with Draymond. I don't know. I don't know the ins and outs of that ones. I don't think Kevin Durant and them were really, you know, like a team. I'll give you an example. It felt like really like a family was the Heat when they had LeBron, D Wade, Bosch, and Birdman, the role yeah. players. Remember them? They're doing the Harlem Shake and they're making videos and they just had a chemistry where it felt like, man, this team feels like a family.
Right.
And that's probably your optimal situation that you would love to have. And it doesn't mean that you have to have it, but I don't view this Warriors team with or without Kevin Durant that way.
Yeah.
You know? And maybe they are, maybe Kevin Durant, but I absolutely don't think Kevin Durant was that chummy with the rest of the guys in that locker room. Now they're good and they're okay with each other.
Right.
There's not a beef, but I just don't think it was. Oh, this family type environment.
Yeah, that's a difficult one because you had a core together for years prior to him getting there. So,
Awkward.
Yeah, it's awkward, right? Like you could be in the circle, but you might not be in the smaller circle. Like, do you know what I mean? Like you're in the general circle of friends, like, but there's a smaller circle of friends that sometimes you might not make it into because you just got here. That's a weird one. And so, you know, you feel that like, man, I know they're cool with me, but are they all, like, are we?
Right.
Are we family? Or are we just family? Like, do you know? And so there could be something to be said for that. You know, but I think Kevin Durant always knew, and most people in Golden State probably felt, and that's why there was a little bit of discord there last year, that this was going to be a stop for him, that this wasn't going to wind up being home for him. Do you know what I mean? Like, he was coming in, he was trying to achieve an objective, and then he was going to be, you know, moving on to whatever was next for him.
Do you feel bad for KD? Because, you know, his initial post on Instagram right after he had the surgery to fix his Achilles was, I'm going to be back. I'm going to be back and better than ever. In this article, this piece with Yahoo Sports, he said, I'm just going to keep getting better. I'll be back playing at a high level. There's nothing for me to worry about. Like, he's optimistic as you get.
Yeah.
But man, there's a part of me that just says, you're still early in this. And you'd never say this to his face. Like if you're in his team, you're encouraging. Sure. But there's a part of me that says, man, does he aware of the reality of the situation, which is you're probably not going to be the same player. And I hope he proves all of us wrong who think that.
Well, look, he can still be really, really good.
Right.
And he said, I'll be back playing at a super high level. Like I tend to agree with that. You will be. But you never get it all back when you come off of Achilles. You just don't. Like, and I've said this, this isn't a knock on Kevin Durant. This isn't a fact about Achilles injuries. Like, you don't come back as the same player. You don't have the same type of lift. You don't have the same type of explosion. So, you know, he's so gifted that he could still come back at 85% of himself and be one of the best players on the planet, maybe the best player on the planet. But you ain't never going to be yourself again.
Yeah.
I don't know that he's wrapped his mind around that.
Right.
And what happens with injuries is like when you come out of a major injury, I only really had one. It was, I had like a scapholunate, but I was casted for like, you know, 6 weeks and it was a whole year worth of recovery. It was nasty. You come out right after post surgery, man, you're gung ho. You're fired up. You're ready to get into this, man. Get this thing off. Like, let's get to work. Like, you know, you see some results really quickly, because it's atrophied and stuff to a point where it doesn't even look like a hand. And now you can move it again and you're like, oh man, this is going to be a breeze. I'm going to get after it. And then you're like a month into rehab and you've kind of plateaued and stuff is tough and they're the dog days of your rehab and you're not seeing the gains anymore and you're like, oh, I'm still way far away from being where I need to be. Then reality starts to sink in. You know what I mean? And you're like, oh, shoot, we got a problem. This is going to be more than I thought it was. And so I imagine somewhere in there where you have to recalibrate because you do. Like, you've pushed through this. Now you're at a point where you're like, am I ever going to be back? Like, I don't see it. Like, I'm not responding. You have to recommit yourself in the middle of rehab to the last part of your rehab, like that second half. All right, dude, I'm all in. I'm going after this. I can be back. But you got to come to the realization at that point that this might not look like it was going to look, but I'm going after it anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I'm in. Let's go. When he gets to that point, and he's fresh off of it. This is a honeymoon phase.
Oh, absolutely.
So to speak, you know? In the middle of that, talk to him like 3 months from now, like when he's grinding and he knows he's still a long way away, and then, you know, he's had a little setback with it. You know, that's when the stuff starts sinking in.
It's sort of like, you know, if you experience a death in the family and right after the funeral, like everybody's there for you.
Yeah.
They're all supporting you.
Right.
And then like the further removed you are of that, you're kind of like, man, I lost something really. You know, like that's probably a realization, Kevin Durant. I lost this level of play.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't get that back, and you could still cope and you still deal and move on and you can still be great. But I think that is going to be a tough moment when he's kind of deep in that rehab process. Somebody who might be able to relate to what Kevin Durant is going through is Tiger Woods. Has dealt with a lot of injuries that he's had to come back from. He comes back, gets the Masters. He's been up and down since then, and now it's more down for Tiger.
Right.
I was really concerned about this round specifically when I heard yesterday at his practice round that he did not use the driver the entire 9 holes. It wasn't even 18 holes. He only hit driver like the first 3 holes and then put it in the bag and was like, let me use my irons. He is struggling in a big way. He was at 4 over, but he just birdied number 1. He started on the back 9, so he's 3 over. So he's getting back on track a little bit, but with this field being the playoffs, tougher field, I don't know. The bar is really low. I don't think he makes the cut, and it's probably better for him just to get the season behind him. You got the great comeback. That story's done. Now you catch your breath and you start ramping up for next season and come up with a plan of how to manage your emotions.
Yeah.
Your schedule physically. And that is something I've heard from a lot of golfers. The new schedule with the PGA Championship moved earlier,
right,
and they're all bunched up. A lot of golfers have struggled with it that are perfectly healthy.
Yeah.
So of course it's going to affect somebody like Tiger who's been through so much.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, this season is pretty much a wrap for Tiger. And I know you can't just shut it down, right? You probably have like sponsor like obligations and stuff like that to be at different events, but for all intents and purposes, this then becomes about like next year for Tiger and figuring out, you know, how to pace himself, how to make sure he's fit enough to compete. If Danny, if it's important enough to him to really go after it like that, I really do believe like that quest for another Masters was so, it meant so much to him. Like you saw it sap so much out of him post Masters, right? Like he didn't look like the same guy. Like emotionally, he didn't look like he was as invested in being out there and golfing as he did prior to the Masters. Now, I could be wrong, but that's what it looked like to me. So when you're recalibrating the things this summer, like, hey man, like, is this grind for me? Like, and I don't mean golf in general,
right,
but I mean like the full schedule, like the Hunting Jacks,
records. Majors,
like, yep. Am I after it still like I was when I was 22 years old? Or does this become more of a sometimey type of thing for me? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
I know something that was really important to him, and he was on the record saying this, and you saw the emotions when he hugged his son and his daughter.
Yeah.
Was he wanted his children to see him win again. Now that you've done that, like, was that the goal for the comeback? Like, was that driving him more than the drive for 18 to catch Jack? I don't know. It sure seemed like it. And then it did feel like, hey, it took so much out of him emotionally. Now you're seeing the physical toll it took on him. Like, I still think he can challenge Jack if he wants to. I just wonder what the plan is. But I can't imagine one of the fiercest competitors we've ever seen.
You know,
if it's changed that much, if it's just shut off, he's that complacent. Maybe he had, like,
this is gonna,
he's got a lot of money.
This is going to sound corny, like, and I don't know if anyone can relate to this, but when I'm watching sports, I'm watching, like, your physical, like, for sure, right?
Yeah.
But I'm watching your face, man. I'm watching your body language. I'm watching what that says to me as much as I'm watching what you're doing with the ball, you know? And I'm telling you, when I watch him on the course
tired.
Yes.
Right.
Pre-Masters, there was a quest that he was on. You could see it in his eyes.
Yeah.
You could see it down the stretch last year at the Tour Championship. That's why I was like, he's gonna win this.
Yep.
Like, you could see it. It was coming out of him. Like, and then post-Masters, he looked exhausted. He looked like, man, like, I'm checking boxes, bro.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a
showing up as I'm supposed to be here.
That's what I'm supposed to do. And when you're in that space for whatever reason, and I'm not, this isn't a judgment thing. This is real. Like when you're in that space, then it doesn't mean as much to you. And the guys that have the look on their face, they're going to beat you, bud. Like they're going to be, they're hungrier than you. They want it more than you. They're grinding more than you are. And you're not, you know, just showing up being the best on the planet anymore because you're 40 some years old. Like it happens to everybody. So that's what I look for. And that's where I judge Tiger. It ain't always about whether, like Tiger sprays it half the time anyway. He still wins or he still won. Didn't matter if he was in the fairway or not, but there was a look in his eye. There was a posture about him, like a confidence that was exuding from him that I don't see post Masters. And that worries me.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to Kennell and Bell. Teasing politics.
Yeah.
Everybody's favorite subject. It is as contentious as it gets. We don't do it a lot out here. We don't want to do it a lot. Just because it's so... And it, even if but people don't really know your political views, they make assumptions based on one phrase or one comment that comes out of your mouth. So we're not going to get into who we're backing for the presidential candidate. Not right now, anyway. But as a player in the NFL, I knew some of my... owners' political views.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them agreed with me, some of them didn't. As a player, and maybe it's because of the nature of where I stood in the hierarchy, maybe if I was a starter, I would have felt differently, but there was no way I was going to rock the boat. Like, there's some things politically too, like when I see people and I'm driving and there's like a like 20 people and they're out there campaigning for somebody.
Yeah.
I'm like, good for you guys.
Yeah.
But I could not. I'm never that passionate about anything, really, that I would go out there and sit in the hot sun and say, vote for so and so.
Yeah.
Kenny Stills, the Miami Dolphins wide receiver, who has been one of the more outspoken activists in the NFL. He is somebody who kneels during the anthem to get the message out about police brutality and how to make it stop. Is not happy with Stephen Ross, the Miami Dolphins team owner, once he found out that Ross held a fundraiser luncheon for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So he took to Twitter and let everybody know about it. He said, you can't have a nonprofit with this mission statement and then open your doors to Trump. Stills tweeted, he was referencing Ross's Rise Foundation because part of the Rise Foundation's mission statement is, quote, a national nonprofit that educates and empowers the sports community to eliminate racial discrimination, champion social justice, and improve race relations. Do we even want to dive into this or is it?
I mean, I will. I typically am not a political person either. I am aware of what's going on with me in the world. My mother, my wife, and other people I know are way more into it than I am. Something that, like, you know, it is what it is for me. I look, generally speaking, if your owner wanted to hold a rally for, or not a rally, but a donation or luncheon or whatever, a fundraising luncheon for Donald Trump, like that really shouldn't affect you as a player. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like that's his right to do that. But when he does have a foundation whose mission statement is what you just read, I do think that there's a little bit of contradictory like behavior there, like, right, you could be kind of a little hypocritical there.
Yep.
And so if Kenny Stills his role in the NB or in the NFLPA and in their quest to kind of, you know, bring awareness to the social injustices like by the p- police officers or whatever, if his job in the NFL is to be a spokesperson for that, I don't have a problem with him saying that, hey man, like, that's not a good look. If you're doing that on one hand, and then you have a foundation who is saying something that clearly, I don't know that we can all agree, but most people can agree. Like that doesn't appear to be Donald Trump's mission, right? Like, and, but I also see Stephen Ross's side, who said, look, I don't always tell him what he wants to hear.
Right.
Like, we've been friends for a long time.
Right.
Like, I have no problem voicing my opinion. We agree on some things and we don't agree. I got plenty of friends that I agree with some things they do and I don't agree with other things that they do. That doesn't mean we can't be friends, but I don't have a problem with Kenny Stills having a problem with it.
Right. Stephen Ross did come out, as you mentioned, and, you know, he did try to distance himself from some of those views that Trump holds or the, you know, that people criticize him for. And he says, we strongly disagree on a lot of things. We agree on some things. And said, quote, he's never been bashful about expressing his opinions to the president. So maybe if you're an eternal optimist, you're saying, hey, maybe Stephen Ross can influence Donald Trump for the better. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe that's an angle you can try to take at it. I do think there's a double standard as far as how players are treated when they become political activists and when owners are, when they become, like, you know, Stephen Ross, is he going to get blasted? He did take some hit criticism for this and some heat for it, but it's something to keep an eye on, because could you imagine, and let's just say, let's take the political views out of it, if Kenny Stills got cut, everyone would be like, it's because of his, that's why, I don't know. Again, I was in a different spot on the bubble. I would have done nothing to rock the boat. Kenny Stills, a little more,
security. Nah, but I mean, this, look.
It is, man. Do you want to kick the hornet's nest of your boss? And yeah, I just.
Not really, but like, that's a touchy subject. NFL players, they were called sons of bitches by the
right,
dude.
Right.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, yep. You know, there's a rhetoric that comes from him sometimes towards people that is offensive, and people, you know, some people can sit back and take it. Other people can't.
Right.
They're like, look, man, I'm not for that. And so, right. You know, like, I'm with Kenny Stills. If you have a problem with that, like, now you got to be willing.
Yeah. Which he clearly is.
You got to be willing to take what comes with that. But I don't have a problem with you saying, hey man, like, you preach one thing and then this is what you're doing. That looks weird to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yep. So Kenny Stills' former coach, Adam Gase, has moved on to the New York Jets. This dude, we already kind of knew he was peculiar. The eyes at the opening press conference, the way he would wear his hat down super low when he was doing press conferences after the game. He's a weird cat.
How hard it is to do that. I mean,
yes. And not blink.
Bugged out.
Maybe I found out why he was bugging out. The dude doesn't sleep at all. He lives on a steady diet of coffee, caffeine, Red Bull, whatever you want to do it. Yeah, that'll make you bug out a little bit. He is peculiar. Ryan Tannehill, his former quarterback, called him the evil genius. Said he's always searching for the perfect play. That's normal. I think a lot of coaches are always doing that. But when you get into the nitty-gritty about him game planning, watching film, 14 or 16-hour days don't seem that long. He's, quote, it goes by fast.
Yeah, right.
It's crazy when you look at the life expectancy. Like, this has got to be taking years off his life. I would say, hey man, have a little bit of balance. I get wanting to work. Amen. I think I'm a workaholic sometimes, put in long hours,
right.
But I'm also balanced when I'm going to spend time with my kids. The craziest story from in here, and his wife Jennifer said he typically gets home around 2 a.m., turns around and goes back at 6 a.m. So are you even home? Why not just sleep at the office?
If I was
his wife, I'd be like, why are you waking me up?
I mean,
just stay there. Stay at the office.
Right.
The best nugget from this story was when his wife gave birth to their child. She had a C-section, so planned operation, 10 a.m. But she seems like she's been kind of desensitized to all of this.
Right.
Because the way she talks about it is like, no big deal. So they pulled the baby out of me and said, it's a boy, Jennifer Gase said. They didn't even put my organs back and sew me up before he was like, you good? I said, yeah, I'm good. He said, all right then, I'm out. He said, you want to cut the umbilical cord? He said, no, I'm good. And then he was right back at it 2 p.m. later that afternoon, game planning again. That's not healthy.
That's not.
That cannot be good. And I know his wife sounds like she's not very, you know, hey, she's kind of desensitized to it. That's not exactly a healthy relationship, or at least it doesn't appear that way.
All right, I got another one for you. This is just, this is really interesting stuff. It says, on his computer, he has a file for every day he has been a coach. Right? It's a long time. In each file is what he did that day and how it worked out. There also is a file for every opponent for every year. And then he has a master folder for each year, which keeps track of needed adjustments. Like, my man is, like, sounds as anal and as particular, as you can get. I guess the jury is still out on what Adam Gase is going to be as a head coach.
Yeah. Right?
Clearly.
My money is not, I would say if I was going to bet one way or another, is he going to be a success with the Jets or is he going to be gone in 3 years? I would probably lean toward gone in 3 years.
Right.
You have to be a people person to be a coach.
So here's where I'm going with this. This is what he can do, right? Like, he's brilliant, apparently,
yeah,
in what he does.
Yep.
And when you're selling, like, a potential employer on that, and you've got this wealth of knowledge, and every question they ask, you've got a buttoned up, tight answer as to how you're going to affect change in that area and how I'm going to get you from point A to point B. Like, that could be an impressive thing. It can get you hired. That, you then have to be a people person, though, Danny, to your point.
Right.
Guys like this are more built for behind the scenes grunt work. Like, assistant type of jobs, like when the head is the people person and he's keeping people together and he's got the rapport and the cachet and he's got a little bit of swag and people respond to him and they want to follow and it's not abrasive. Guys like that they tend to be abrasive. They tend to be like my way or the highway because they're really anal about stuff and that rubs people the wrong way. So those guys are more built for behind the scenes in my opinion. He might wind up being a great coach, but it's not surprising to me that he would continue to get hired because he's so smart. And when you're sitting there interviewing people, you want answers.
Yeah.
As the person that's looking for the employee, you want answers to these problems. He's generally got them. It's just whether he can execute them or not.
I get that Bill Belichick is cutthroat as well. He's probably not the most personable person out there. But I
bet he's got more personality than you think.
He leads on. I think so too. Nick Saban as well. But also there's some fact where you've got to get players to want to play for you.
Right.
You know, like they want to succeed for you. And granted, they're always playing for themselves for a paycheck. I get that too. But
those two are older though, Danny.
Yeah.
Like they're older dudes, right? Like we tend to forgive a little grumpiness.
And they both had a lot of success.
Well, that too.
Gains a lot of respect.
Right? But you're talking about a young dude, ain't never won nothing, looks probably younger than half the dudes in the locker room.
Right.
And
if you treat your wife that cutthroat, like, and I'm not joking, like the way he treated and talked to her in one of the most momentous, and I am okay if dads skip their childbirth for a game. Like, so I'm pretty open to, hey, you don't have to be there. But if you are there, like, at least show
either
a little more.
Yeah, either.
Exactly. If he's that cutthroat with them, imagine what he's going to be like if a player, you know, throws an interception or if they, you know, at times maybe they need encouragement. It doesn't sound like he's there emotionally for anybody, neither his family members or his players. And sometimes players do need emotional needs that met, you know, they need to be encouraged. They need to be motivated a certain way. And yes, there's a time where they need to be chewed out. But there was no love loss with several of his players in the Miami Dolphins, and he said it's no big deal, you know, referencing Jarvis Landry, Jordan Phillips, Jay Ajayi, all kind of gloating over him being fired. He seemed to downplay it. Adam Gase said, quote, 15 years and only three guys are bitching about it. I'll take that.
Well, it's not really 15 years, though.
Right, it was only one or two.
Right, and, and you've been in another capacity. Like, those personalities, while in one, like, wearing one hat, they're fully tolerable. No one's got a problem. It works for the organization. You change his hat into something that people have to deal with on a day to day, and it could be a train wreck. Do you know what I mean? Like, every personality isn't built to be a head coach. That's just facts.
Yeah, for sure. When Peyton Manning was waiting for him in meetings after this baby was delivered, it was 2 p.m. Manning was shocked to see him come back to the meeting room, and Peyton said, "You got to be kidding me. Didn't your wife just have a baby 2 hours ago?" And he said, "Yeah. But did you really think I was going to let you win this one without me?" So, interesting there from Adam Gase.
You, bro.
A little balance, man. Just get a little balance, coach. It'll do your life a lot better.
Sleep, dude. Yeah.
All right, welcome back to Kennell and Bell. Tiger Woods, just a quick update on his scorecard. Not the best round that he's had. And it's recently, it's just been kind of falling, tapering off.
First, yeah, bro. Give it to me straight.
So he's through, what is that, 12 to 11? Three over. Nothing great. You know, had a very bumpy up and down, mostly down front nine, 39. Yeah. Four over on the front, and then birdied his 10th hole, which was number one, as he started on the back.
Right.
So we'll keep you posted on it, but I would not, I'm usually optimistic.
Nah.
I don't know, it doesn't look good for his chances for the weekend. The leaderboard as it's unfolded.
Oh.
Roy Merritt going low with a 7-0. See, that's the other thing. You see some low numbers. Kisner's at 5-under. John Rahm at 5-under. You see guys going low, and you're like, oh, the course is gettable.
Yes, and you're getting roasted by it.
Exactly. You're not even around even par. That's the thing that's a little bit concerning there. So we'll keep you updated on that.
Lower deck, Oppie Barnrot?
Yeah, Oppie Barnrot.
Yeah, there we go.
You know that. We walked by him in the,
definitely.
The parking lot.
Definitely.
You can see his physique.
Yes, definitely.
Doesn't exactly look like some of the other trends now where everybody's all chiseled.
Right.
Definitely a little bit different. And he's a pretty funny character, too. I was reading an article about him in the Golf Digest. That was pretty good. And Tiger, just in my ear, Cocodero, another bogey. So he's back to four over. So let's just break 80, Tiger. Let's keep it under 80 on this round. With NBA offseason in swing, I thought this was interesting. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, how commonplace this is. So LeBron James is reportedly organizing a team minicamp to be held in Vegas prior to the start of training camp. That's according to Stadium's Sham Sarania. He's hoping the team will bond and build chemistry by getting together a bit early. Is this something you experienced?
Yeah.
It is. So it's fairly common practice. Mm-hmm. And was it always organized by like the alpha, like the one? Or could it have been somebody who was more of a veteran? Like how does it work, the planning of this? Did you ever plan one?
The last time around, we never got to it. But Al Jefferson and I and Paul Millsap were planning one for our Utah Jazz team. I had just signed to go back to Utah, and we were in the middle of a lockout. So, you know, I was playing with the idea of bringing everybody down to IMG and having us like work out at IMG. I had a guy there, because, you know, we were going to get off to a quick start, having been in a lockout. And we actually thought we had a pretty good, cause Darren Williams was still on that team and stuff like that. So usually it's your guy. But it can be a vet. It can be, you know, whoever takes it upon themselves to plan something like that. And generally speaking, guys are in, you know, everyone going into the season, like, you know, this, everybody's trying to win. Like, you want to give yourself the best opportunity to do that. And especially if you're in a, you know, a heightened sense of win now, territory like the Lakers are.
I wish I was there. I think it'd be fun.
Yeah.
This is going to be doing drills. Like, they're going to Vegas.
Nah, dog, you're kicking it.
Somewhere where there's good weather and you can have fun at night. You can hang out. It is great for bonding. Like, this is where you build, you know, earlier in the show, we're talking about the Warriors family atmosphere. This is how you build that.
Absolutely.
You know, because it's low stress. You don't have to worry about coaches hovering over you. They're not going to be chewing you out.
Right.
And you're going to be like, where are we going tonight?
Correct. Where are we going? Where's dinner? Where are we going after that? Let's push the workouts back by like three hours tomorrow morning. There's nobody holding you to the schedule. It's great.
Exactly. They're not the only team that's considering. This one was more shocking because, of course, I picture LeBron as a guy who is that leader, who is going to foster that environment.
Yeah.
Kawhi Leonard, more of an introvert. You know, you don't see him ever address the media. Apparently, he's doing the same thing with his new teammates with the Clippers. Probably even more, both these teams, because they have so much turnover, so many new faces. Kawhi Leonard is working to form a mini camp in Miami.
Oh, word. That is interesting.
Can we get in on that? Let's go.
Hey, we might be able to. My man Trent Redden.
See? That's what I'm talking about. Hook it up.
Okay.
Pitching is like your high school team. Like, you want exposure.
While LeBron is a culture driver, he drives culture, and he's setting the tone. Kawhi is a bit introverted. That's interesting.
I wonder if somebody from the organization
said, hey, I need you to do this. Let's get this cracking.
Yeah. Said, hey, this is a good idea. This is what a lot of guys are doing.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what happened with Ben Roethlisberger when he had guys down to his lake house this offseason and it hadn't happened. Now he used to do it.
Right.
I have a feeling that Kevin Colbert, their GM, maybe it was Tomlin, somebody came over and said, hey, you got to build up a little more goodwill, good faith between your guys. You know, like, you got to get your guys.
Right.
Now, what do you do? What do you think LeBron does if somebody says, I got plans. I'll see you at camp. Does he hold it against him or is it cool?
I know. Yeah, well, that's good.
You're going to come. You're going to go to camp.
You're going to go to camp.
Because my last couple weeks.
You're going to be doing this all. Yes. You're going to be watching your bag, dog.
I'm getting that rock in 2 minutes, like a last minute shot situation. He's going to look the other way because that'd be an interesting dynamic to have to say no to LeBron. All right, welcome back to Kennell and Bell. So Kirk Cousins has a problem on his hands, and you may laugh at it. You might say it's not that
big literally
of a deal. He literally has a problem on it. So he has a problem with his new center, the sweat. He was talking about Garrett Bradbury's sweat problem. He said, I'm going to take it back again because he has him for rookies. He's a rookie, so he has him there for the preseason. Kirk Cousins said, I'm going to take it back to how much he sweats. He promises it's not a problem in games, but it remains to be seen because his shorts today were soaked. He says it's not a problem on game days, so the moment of truth, Friday night.
That is disgusting, bro. That is undercarriage sweat, man. I don't know what I'm allowed to say on CBS, but that's undercarriage sweat, man.
All right. So
that's
a similar issue that might be grosser.
Oh, bro.
Than Kirk Cousins. Do you want to hear it on the Kennell and Bell podcast or not?
I mean,
because I don't know if you want to go there.
Go for it.
We had a rookie center from Wisconsin. His name was Derek Engler.
Okay. Ames and all, huh? Here we go.
Yeah, yes, I'll call him out. He actually does some broadcasting still in Madison, right. Wisconsin. Right. Great dude. Nice guy. We started calling him Pigpen because he had to clean it up a little bit. So I started noticing in practice, we'd go out there. I always showered before practice. Like I'd take a hot tub, get warmed up, and then I'd finish it with a shower and then get ready. So I'm really clean in practice, which doesn't make a lot of sense because you end up getting dirty and then you shower again after. So I know I smell pretty good. And you know what else most quarterbacks like to do? You lick your fingers.
Oh, bro. Right?
Because you got to get a good grip, right? So at some point, I'm making a lot of gestures towards my face. And every time I'm getting this whiff, I'm like, it kind of smells. What is that smell? And sure enough, I smell my hand. It smells smells like Derek Engler's crack is what it smells like, which is not the best smell. So I had to sit him down with the other quarterbacks. Thankfully, where everybody's on the same page because they started noticing some of it too. And he was running with the first team. God. And so I'm getting a lot of reps up in his crack, which doesn't smell exactly that great. So we're like, hey, man, you know, it's kind of an awkward conversation. Like, hey, are you wiping correctly?
Oh, bro, what are you talking about? Taking care
of things?
What did he say?
So he was like, he was sheepish. He's like, hey, man, I wipe. Like, I do everything right. So I got him like a case of baby powder and was like, here, got him extra toilet paper, got him some wet wipes and all of it. And it was just somebody who kind of had the sweaty butt like going. It helped a little bit, but ultimately it never truly went away. That's why we kept calling him Big Pen.
You had that man's ass on your hand.
And it was like, you should have seen me after practice in the shower. I did like the, like, just like this for a half an hour trying to get it off my hands. It was awful. So I totally understand where Kirk Cousins is coming from. But the issue for him, I'll trade sweat any day than what I was dealing with.
Yeah, that's
filthy. Which were sloppy leftovers or whatever it was.
Filthy.
So yeah, now that we've grossed you out for your...
Is it? All right. All jokes aside, that was disgusting. Yeah. I did not want to hear that. If he's super sweaty, like that.
Oh yeah, cause what happens is the ball gets wet.
Right.
And there's like, you can throw in wind, you can throw in snow cause it's a little bit drier, but when there is a little bit of moisture on the football, it slips and all of a sudden your accuracy is completely thrown off. Sometimes you'll airmail it way over the guy. Sometimes you really want to put it in a tight window. You gotta be, and it's some of its confidence.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this is a wet ball. Where is this going?
Right.
It absolutely is an issue. But I would tell him, it's probably when he says his shorts were wet, they're probably not in full pads.
Yeah.
Usually when you're in full pads, you're wearing like the under tights.
Soak up some of it.
You know, you've got something else in there and you know, you can, again, baby powder, whatever tricks you have to use, you go ahead with those. I don't know if you remember Dan Marino. He was, because he had a big towel on the front on his own waist. But then a lot of times if you see a center, they're wearing one in the back of theirs and you kind of wipe and then flip it over.
Yep.
Sometimes that's because the center's sweating so much. You try to do it there too. So yeah, Kirk Cousins, get it straightened up. Get it dried up there, Garrett Bradbury. Jalen Ramsey is not afraid to trash talk. It's been well documented as his article in GQ, last year really focused on, but even before that, everybody's known he's a trash talker. He said he's taken it to another level and he did in college. He said, quote, I was playing a big receiver at whatever school. I would look up his Instagram and slide into his girlfriend's DMs before the game.
Wow.
People got hot about that.
Wow.
I'll say when I got to the league though, I stopped that because now people got wives and stuff. Somebody would get shot over talking about somebody's wives. So good for him for at least recognizing, maybe this is something I should stop doing at this level. Cause he is right. Guys are you're dealing with families.
And funny.
And others.
But childish.
Yeah, funny, it is
but
hilarious.
Childish. You don't want to be dealing with grown men, wives and significant others.
It is hilarious in high school though.
I mean, that's funny. Yeah, that's funny.
That one. And you got to have some serious cojones to do that.
Yeah.
Like to go after dudes. And that, but again, in high school, he's probably dominating everybody.
That's a wild, you know, that's
he's a
wild
five star. Yeah, he absolutely is.
Wild boy.
Dabo Swinney is one of my favorite coaches in college football. I think he compares the most to Bobby Bowden, who I knew, who, you know, was a lovable guy. I think he cares about his players. I think he tries to do things the right way, but he did something this week that I thought was really petty.
Mm-hmm.
So Kelly Bryant last year was his starting quarterback entering the season. He's competing with Trevor Lawrence. After four games, he says, you know what? I'm going to take advantage of this new... Oh, yeah, Dabo Swinney says, torch is passed. I'm going to go with Trevor Lawrence after the fourth game. Kelly Bryant looks at it and says, four games, I can still transfer, keep my eligibility, not use this year, transfer somewhere else and go start my last year of college. So he moves on. You could tell at the time that Dabo wasn't too thrilled about it, but now we find out just how upset Dabo Swinney was about it when he did not give Kelly Bryant a national championship ring.
So petty.
I thought this was really petty. Like, what's the big deal? He helped you win a quarter of the games of the season. So what? He left. And I didn't love it at the time. I felt like it was a more selfish decision. But so what? He still helped you.
No, no, no.
Not only last year.
No, 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 no. You know what the selfish decision was?
What?
Benching him for Kelly, for
Trevor Lawrence.
Like, that's a self-serving decision.
Yeah.
Coach. So, like, I bet that Kelly Bryant wouldn't have transferred had he continued to play
right.
the starter, right?
Right.
You made the self-serving decision to move Trevor Lawrence in. That's your right. But now a kid has to do what's best for him, right? Like, if he has an opportunity to play another year because he's only played four games. I mean, you started those dominoes falling, I guess would be my point, if you were Dabo Swinney. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It seems so petty. Because now we are, and now, you know, and I sent out a tweet about this morning, and I got Clemson fans all mad at me. They're insulting Kelly Bryant. Hey, he quit on his team. You got people saying, well, when I quit my job, I didn't get an end of year bonus from my former employer. And it's just such a unique situation. You can't compare this to a workplace environment. He was on the team. He helped him win four games.
Yeah.
And yes, he left, but he still helped you achieve a portion of your goal. We saw David Blatt, who, again, he was fired, but he got a championship ring for the Cleveland
sure.
Cavaliers.
Like, you've poured blood, sweat, and tears into offseason. Like, you've pushed Trevor Lawrence. Like, there are any number of reasons that you're invested in that team's championship. Do you know what I mean? And again, like, why are we all pro, like, grown man making a decision that serves him, and we're anti-kid making a decision that could help set him up for the rest of his life? Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't understand why, like, as a society, we're always going to be like, yeah, it's Dabo. Like, dude, if a kid – Dabo makes millions and millions and millions of dollars. Dabo made a call.
Million.
He made a call,
yep.
Right? And then the kid acted accordingly and had to make a call for his future. I got no beef with that.
Right.
Don't be petty on the back end if you're the man making $90
million. $93 million. Dabo Swinney just got a new deal. His quote was, he wasn't on the team. You got to be on the team to get a ring. I love Kelly and appreciate what he did for us, but he decided to move on.
No, you don't.
You know how many times they've spoken since he left?
No, you don't. Zero. No,
zero.
You don't say that.
He said, hopefully we'll be able to have a visit and sit down and have a good conversation.
Stop lying.
I know.
Stop.
It just seems like, why not? And he clearly is. Again, I think it's totally petty that he's doing this. The sad part about this, to me, there could have been a solution. Now, I don't know Kelly Bryant's mindset last year. But you could have been honest with him, started Trevor Lawrence from the start, but you want to protect your own butt and take the safe play and kind of ease in Trevor Lawrence. But you could have said, hey, instead of transferring halfway through the year, why don't you stick around as the backup, but we'll protect you. We won't play you unless Trevor Lawrence gets a season-ending injury.
Right.
And then you can help us win the championship. You can stay here. You can still transfer and go to Missouri or wherever else you want to go, and there's no love lost between anybody. Now,
right.
Maybe that was discussed, and Kelly Bryant's like, no, I'm either a starter or I'm out of here. Then I have no problem with him making that decision, but it could have been handled better, I think, by all parts last year.
Yeah, that's a rational way to approach that. Like, and you know, if you have some inside source, like, find out if that.
Right, I'll try to get to work on it. You know what else we got? We got breaking news out of the NFL. The Browns have traded Duke Johnson. Remember,
hey.
He wanted out. Baker Mayfield.
Where's Duke going? That's a Miami kid.
Houston Texans.
Hey, yo.
A good shot for Deshaun Watson. We'll get you covered on that and everything right here next on CBS Sports HQ.